J Beam and J Savitri, everyone. I'm Thinmori Soundarajan, and this is Cast in the United States with First Post. Today's episode is an exploration of caste in medicine, and we are joined by the wonderful Pardeep and Reina, who have collectively worked many years in healthcare as a doctor and a public health professional, respectively. They are going to share with us experience of caste in this field. And let's just dig in. So welcome, everyone.
Jai Bhim.
So Pardeep, let's start with you. You have been a doctor for many years, and I'm just wondering, what was it like to experience your time in the diaspora as a Dalit doctor?
So I've been directly involved in the healthcare field for the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years. And experience that I would like to share during this episode. One incident, there was directly investigating my caste identity based on my last name. And this question was very direct and was coming from a close friend. And during the conversation, he presumed the last name is a Jat caste before I answered him. I wanted to correct him to escape social isolation. And this incident happened back in 2015 when I invited him to my house for dinner. So I work in a hospital setting. When we get a chance, we take a break in the physician lounge. And I happened to be there during break time. And I heard this Indian cardiologist was talking negative about Indian reservation system. And reservation policy in India is a form of affirmative action, very similar to US. This cardiologist was upset that why second generation Dalits utilize the affirmative action benefit when their parents have used it once. And, you know, this is very common discussion topic almost every day in academic setting in India in one or the other form. I was a little surprised to hear from this cardiologist such an uneducated reasoning. This is a cardiologist who's been in the United States for over 30 years, and I feel pity for him that he has not inculcated democratic values of U.S. that embrace affirmative action. Just like any other American who feel proud of First Amendment right, I softly questioned him, sir, why do you think so? Why second generation children in India should not avail reservation policy? And he reacted before letting me finish the whole answer. Oh, you know, they are taking the share of scheduled caste, also known as Dalits. They take share of these poor Dalit people who can also benefit from a reservation policy. You know, this is the reason we hear from every upper caste in India, almost in all disciplines. So I questioned further, provoking him, do you have any data to support your statement? It might be appealing to emotions that what you said, just said now. And do you know how many students have benefited from reservation policies since India got independence? How many of them were first generation and second generation? So his answer was limited to his personal experience that one of his college friends from lower caste or Dalit, who is a physician in India, his children also utilize the reservation policy. They should not have used it. In replying back to him, I said, sir, your data is one person. I'm talking about the ground reality. I'm talking about 20% of India. He had no answer. It seems like he was feeling a little offended now. So probing him further, I asked, do you know where reservation policy is mentioned in Indian Constitution and what does it say? Now he was more irritated that why I'm interrogating him. So I explained to him, sir, let me help you. Reservation policy is mentioned in Indian Constitution in Part 3. It comes under Fundamental Rights, Article 15 and 16. Talks about reservation policies for Dalits, in case if you're not aware about it. I can tell that he was Brahmin by caste based on his last name. I changed the conversation towards him. You know, Doctor, the judiciary in India is filled with Brahmins. Almost more than 60% judges in Supreme Court of India are from Brahmin caste. And you know, because of such incompetent judges, Indian justice system is in danger. More than 100,000 cases pending, and since Indian independence, they have not produced any landmark judgment that has utility of public good. Moreover, to help increase your knowledge, there's no competitive exam for them. Despite the recommendation at the time of adoption of Constitution. They have gotten those positions merely on the basis of nepotism. And you already know their performance. Such an incompetent system is not a concern to you, and you're more concerned about second-generation Dalits taking the benefit of reservation policy. Now you can imagine he was so infuriated, saying, oh, you're out of your mind. Where did you get this data? So he politely answered, "Sir, I know you're a cardiologist, you know cardiology, but please get some basic knowledge about Indian constitution and reservation policy before you say so in future." And, you know, since then, he would try to avoid me in the hospital corridor. And I was very shocked that, you know, upper caste doctors, even if they move to United States or any other country, the caste-based hatred in their mind is still alive after decades.
Yes, I think it's interesting. Our previous guests all talk about how dominant castes, you know, often reduce the conversation of caste solely to one of reservation. Why do you think this is, Pardeep?
That's a very good question. I think it has to do how the upper caste people in India narrate the conception about reservation. So as I mentioned, because this particular cardiologist who was preeminent by caste has no idea about why the need of reservation policy. So this is all manipulated by their politicians, by the media, how it portrays to the public. And these people, without any knowledge of the background reservation policy, they have emotional appeal without any background data to say that, oh, this is bad happening to them, or this is like they're misusing this. I think it's a lack of knowledge which attributes more to such a narrative. And obviously, they don't want to see any Dalit rising up to their level. They're happy. They don't have any issues when you are cleaning the streets or when you're working as a manual scavenger or when you're tanning a dead cow. It's okay for them. Then they're happy. But as you see that you are competing with them in every field of life, in every discipline, that's where this hatred becomes very obvious and very blatant.
Right. You know, another thing that you shared just now also struck as quite interesting to me. And that is that, you know, I think a lot of people in the diaspora think that casteism always happens between Brahmins and other castes. Brahmins are the only, you know, kind of perpetuators of this kind of casteist experiences. But really, in your case, for example, you know, a Jat person was asking you, right, like what your caste may have been. And so it seems like what we're seeing is a lot of casteism between different castes, like even the middle caste. You have any thoughts on that, Pardeep?
Sure. I think in terms of Jats, this is mainly concentrated in the north part of India, especially in Punjab and Haryana. And they are in traditional Hindu system, they fall under a category called Shudras. Or nowadays, they are called other backward class. Some of them, because they were economically well off based on the land distribution policies, so they were moved to forward caste. They never went into so-called upper caste. They never promoted to that level, but they were moved to forward caste or a general category. And they have embraced this sort of mindset, because now the notion of superiority based on caste from Brahminical structure. And I think that's driving this caste system, especially in Jats. And most of them are not aware about their own background history.
And, you know, Pardeep, this is like such a big thing in the diaspora, because you have a very, very strong Punjabi and Sikh Jat community that is constantly creating content, whether it's YouTube videos or hip hop songs, where it's all about, you know, flashing Jat superiority. And, you know, for a lot of the Punjabi kids that I know, for them, like they're leaning into this mode of casteist culture because they see it as kind of a resistance to white supremacy. Like they want to be their culture. And I met, you know, kids that were Jat and they were like, oh yeah, it's like a tribal identity. We used to be the tribes in power. And I was like, where is this nonsense and this education happening? You know, because they're all earnest kids who are, you know, really struggling with a lot of different economic and, you know, racial discrimination, but at the same time, they don't realize that they're actually taking up the mantle of deeply casteist positions as well. So there's like miseducation happening on both rounds of this.
That's so true. If you visit any village of Punjab, you will see the same arrogance and the same Brahminical mindset of Jat people. Even people from OBC in India, OBC means other backward caste, which falls under umbrella of Shudra in Brahminical structure. So they have never been a narrative setter. So they followed the books or the system of Brahmins, And they were the one who created this narrative of superiority. And now, since they are a little bit well off, so they followed this blindly. And that's one of the inherent bias in a caste system, because it is a degraded system where one feels better than other because they are now not discriminated by someone superior to them. And especially in Punjab, from Jat community, I have not seen any intellectual so far who has come into prominence at national or international level that has depicted their exact history, like Dr. Ambedkar from Dalit community. He has brought Dalit history and Shudra history to the forefront at national and international level. And that component in Jat community is lacking. So I think their whole narrative is what Brahmin has fed them in the schools or in their religious temples or gurudwaras. I think that's what has to do with how they perceive the notion of this Brahminical superiority in them.
Well, I really want to bring Reina into the conversation. Now, Reina, I know you're a public health official and you've been in this field for many years. And from my previous conversations, I know that you actually had a very challenging time with one of your managers who was dominant caste. Can you share what happened and also how that sheds a light in terms of bias within the public health field with relationship to caste?
Hi, Thanmoji, Jay Bhim, and thank you for giving us this platform to express caste bias in medical field and public health field. So yes, when I was working in a laboratory in a hospital, and I had this coworker and the manager, and who were belonging to the same community. So my coworker was always depressed because she was not treated the way she is treated in India, and she was very vocal about it. So the words were exactly the same what I'm saying. She used to say that how people here don't treat her higher or superior the way she was treated in India. In India, she was treated so highly, people would bow in front of her and nobody would question her because she belonged to higher caste, and here people don't care and people point her mistakes on her face. So she was very depressed about that, and she was very vocal about that. Not that she was trying to find the caste of other Indian people, but she was very depressed that why she's not being treated higher here. We had a very diverse group of working group, but we had more Indians. But at the same time, we had other techs who were white, Caucasians, Afro-Americans, and Hispanics. So when she was throwing her caste to all these co-workers or her superiors too, and they would just have a face that they're disgusted, and they would try to inquire about it. So they would find another Indian who they will try to find out what this caste system is or why she is behaving that way. And since I was not the same community as my manager and my this coworker that I mentioned, so they particularly would catch me during lunchtime to learn more about it, and they would question me, "What? Why she is always flaunting her caste on us? Like, we have nothing to do with her caste. Who is she? Like, why she does that? What is the psychology behind it?" And lunchtime, most of my time would be spent on explaining to them what the caste system is, and she comes from upper caste, and how they do atrocities on others, and nobody had the guts to question them. And especially she, this particular coworker comes from a village where the caste system is very, very deep-rooted. So after learning that, they said, "But that's in India. Why can't she keep that mind in India and hear us work as a team? Because American values are more like teamwork and respecting the diversity here." So this happened, and also she was also always backed up by the manager, who was the same community. It was very depressing, and I worked there for close to 5 years. And as soon as I left that workplace, and I was never given a raise there, I was never given a good evaluation scores over there. And she was promoted, that this coworker was promoted, and her patient care skills were really, really, really bad. And people would come up, or patients would complain, and some patients would had gone to higher level, to the CEOs, to complain about this, my coworker's patient care skills. And this coworker would get very upset that how dare they to question me, or how dare they to complain about me. They don't know what caste I belong. These are the words she used to use. And as soon as I left that workplace and I moved to another very, very upscale hospital, which is top 10 hospitals, I moved to this hospital and I was promoted within 4 years. So that experience made me feel like, wow, I was facing the casteism there being in America. So yeah, this is my first experience and I was very new to US. So I was still learning the culture here, still learning everything. And I was into the mindset that had in India, they have normalized the caste discrimination so much that even when you come to US, you don't really question it. I was very young. So I never questioned it, but I did feel that difference when I moved to a new hospital and I was promoted and I was appreciated for my work. And I had no Indian coworkers there or even the managers who were Indian. The group was very diverse.
That is a common thread that we've been hearing from other Dalits on our podcast is that when Dalits are being supervised by anyone that's not of Indian origin, they succeed, they thrive. But when you are under dominant caste supervision, there's always some problem, particularly if they find out that you're Dalit. And in many cases, it often goes back to your educational environment. And I think this is what I'm really curious about, is that we've heard a lot about how casteist the tech universities are. But I'm wondering, is the field of public health casteist, and what was your training like?
So while I was going to school for public health, I made this Indian friend. Because when you come from India, you are always looking for that same culture, people, at least from India, so you can speak your language because you are still not fluent in English and you can experience the same food or same culture. So I made this friend who came on student visa and was doing the same degree at that time, and she was looking for a job in order to afford her tuition. So she was working in an Indian restaurant nearby while she was working. So one time we had this conversation where she comes from in India, because she was Punjabi, but she comes from different part of India where the Punjabis are not higher in percentage. So she was mentioning she was from Indore, India. And I never heard any Punjabi coming from Indore. So I was like, wow, I never heard any Punjabi. And she's like, you know, I'm not just a Punjabi. I'm the higher caste Jat Punjabi. The way she flaunted her caste kind of pushed me away from keeping her in my friend circle. I was like, wow, I need to stay away. As soon as she flaunted her caste right there. And then she was having trouble because she was working in an Indian restaurant nearby where she had to pick up as a waiter. And she did not like her job, not because there was some issues with the coworker or another issues, but her main issue of working in an Indian restaurant, that I belong to a Jat community, a richer community, and the higher caste, and I don't like to pick up people's dirty dishes from their table and serving them. That's not my job. That was her comment, and she quit her job as soon as got another job, and she was never happy in that job because it was not her caste work to do. So that experience was during while I was getting training. I was in public health schooling, so that was during the school time.
Yeah, and you really see that this is also a trend, that you see a lot of dominant caste Indians like starting to settle and think differently, you know, good or bad, because once they're outside of the caste hegemonies of India and they come to the diaspora, they're confronted with what it feels like to be put into another hierarchy. And I think some people take it as a challenge to change and also, you know, drop their caste privilege, while others use it to sediment and really lean into their caste, you know, dominance. And so it's always interesting to see how that then impacts you, because these alumni networks become very powerful, particularly when you're leaning on them to get jobs and what have you. But Reina, I know also that like you have worked with other medical professionals with your role in public health, and the casteism amongst medical professionals is also pretty damning. And you have a friend, Lalita, who is a nurse, who works at a boarding care facility, and she had some pretty intensive casteist exchanges as well. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So I have this friend of mine, and she's also very close to me, and we happened to discuss about our caste, and she mentioned she works in a boarding care facility, and I was asking her, are you open about your caste at your work amongst the Indian people? And she said, no, I cannot even if I want to. And I was like, why? Because you're living in America. Why can't you be open about your caste? She's like, because I do have some Indian nurses working with me as a co-workers, and they're always flaunting their Jat caste. Their community is so rich, and they're upper caste, and they're so good. They have their own movies and everything. They have dominant. And the other comment she told me that these nurses have made is always talking down about the scheduled caste or Dalit people, that in Punjabi communities, the Dalits are mostly addressed as Chamars. So she said that they always say Chamar is this, Chamar are disgusting, Chamar are that. So she's like, even if I want to, I would never open up my caste because they will be discriminating me. And next thing I would know is sitting with them eating food, I would always feel uncomfortable because they would never share their table with me. And this is like the work environment of public health.
I've heard this story from Punjabi Dalits all across California where, you know, fields you don't anticipate caste being in, like the assembly line of, you know, a canning company or, you know, like you were saying in terms of medical care or even like mom and pop shops. You know, this question of the Jat dominance and also the usage of Chamars as slurs and negative comments, it seems to be so prevalent. And without caste as a protected category, we're not able to be able to create the kinds of remedies we need in the workplace or in our educational institutions to protect people's basic rights. Because again, if they were saying those same things from a racial lens, those people would be fired. You would have a clear pathway for an HR grievance. But in this scenario, you don't really have anything.
That is very true. Yes, we need that system where our community feels comfortable to bring this issue to the HRs. So you're very right. We need that.
Yeah, Thermoji, I totally agree. I think unless the caste discrimination is added as a protected category in U.S. statutes, unless that's there in the law, there's no deterrent to these casteist people. If this is there as a break on their notion of superiority, then definitely they will feel that pushback and that might, to some extent, that they are not open and they will at least respect other people individuality and as a profession or as a coworker.
And really the law is there for where people's political will fails, right? Like to be honest, like dominant caste people have the right to be casteist if they want to be. But what they don't have the right is to do it in public institutions where it's against the law and against the form of policy. So be a casteist in your own home, but don't bring it to the cafeteria. Don't bring it to the message boards. Don't bring it to the place of work where it impacts the effectiveness of people to be able to do their jobs and really the human potential. You know, I think that's like just the basic that we need to just kind of agree and move on from, because the longer we allow casteism to continue in these institutions, the more that we see the diminishment of our people, and it's unacceptable. But I also think, you know, Reina, there was another point that you also really made about the damages of having casteist medical professionals, because you yourself, like, you know, on the client side and the patient side, you had a casteist doctor, and that was very jarring. And I'm wondering if you could share what your experience was with our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So this incident happened just 10 days ago. So, and I'm bringing this incident because I have talked about four incident that happened 14 years ago. And then this is the current situation where I needed a physical, that every year we needed a physical with our physicians. So because of this coronavirus pandemic going on, everything is delayed. So whatever physician I was had available, I chose that physician. And as soon as I got into the physician's office, I learned that it was supposed to be physician assistant. And I requested for a physician because this is the only appointment I'm getting. And I would rather see a physician than a physician assistant. And my physician assistant happened to be very busy that day. So they said, okay, the only physician we have available is so-and-so. I was like, that's fine. And I always, always avoid Indians at workplace, Indians and in a restaurant, Indians in any place where I have to have a conversation with them, because the conversation always goes in a wrong direction. So this physician, and I had no choice here. So I said, that's fine. If there's an Indian physician, I'm okay. So this Indian physician, as soon as he enters, he's already looking at my chart. The first question he asked me was, your name throws me off because Reina doesn't really come from Hindu name. So he was like, your name throws me off and your last name is different. So I was kind of confused. Are you Indian? I was like, yes, I'm very much Indian. I answered that. And I already know that where this is going. And he is not focused on my health or going through my chart. The first thing he is so stuck on is my name. And now he started, where does this name come from? And I said, this is mainly in this part of India. And then the next question, he was like, which part and what does it belong to? And I was like, okay, this is going in very wrong direction. I cut the physician short right away to say that, oh, what was my reports or what test we are going to do? So I cut him very short in a very blunt way to show him that I'm not interested in that conversation. Let's get to business. So then good thing he got the idea. And this is a very, very old physician. He was older generation. So the other question he mentioned was very derogatory and very discriminatory, not towards the caste. They're always patriarchal too. And when the question of birth control came up, he asked me, are you interested in birth control? I was like, sure, I think that I would like to have one. And he said, you already had a boy? And that question really annoyed me. First of all, you're trying to investigate my caste. And then you're also telling me about yourself. You're very patriarchal. And it was a very annoying question. And then after, I just cut that meeting short. I don't need the physician. I was like, okay, that's it. I am not interested anymore. I walked out and I ended the visit there. He didn't even go through my chart. You can already say, because in my chart is mentioned, I have a daughter. So I only have one child. So in Indian community, they mostly have two child because they want to make sure they have a boy in order to your patriarchal mind. And this is your patriarchal mind. So he questioned me, so you already had a boy, meaning that you need a birth control because you don't need any more kids. Your boy is running your family, your generation.
That is just so sick. It's just so sick. Yeah. Not believe these people.
And I'm just, my kind of last question for Reina actually is, all of these difficulties, how do you think it affects our social and family life?
It's very, very depressing. I choose not to meet Indians. Even when we travel a lot out of the country to learn more about different countries, their cultures, their food. We're just so interested in learning about the human evolution going further. So how people are different, what they choose. So every time, even when I travel outside the country, I don't want to face any Indians anywhere I go. And this has also brought us in a very social, isolated environment where I do force myself. Sometimes the isolation gets to that point that I'm okay to adjust or okay to accommodate to tell myself that, okay, I can do some adjustment. I can tolerate some things of these castes or Indian people because I really need that social environment, and especially for my child to grow as well. But it's just every time I get slapped, and I have learned this lesson hard way. I'm still learning in a hard way that is just never worked with Indians. I avoid Indian every place, and this has really pushed us in social isolation.
And this is also a very, important call to action, I think, for Savarna listeners, is that if the diaspora is so toxic that Dalits would rather be alone than engage with you, that's really a call for self-reflection to change, because we shouldn't have to do that. We're not in our homelands. We're in the United States. We actually have many issues that we could be unified in terms of bringing racial equity and challenging white supremacy. And instead of doing the work we need to do in a unified way, people are still just talking about reservations as if it's 1960s. I mean, it's stupid. At a certain point, people have to recognize that, the talking and maintaining of caste privilege is actually holding us all behind. And if we really want to exhibit the fullness of our human potential, they need to drop their privilege. And we as Dalits, we get to heal and we get to live our best lives and we get to be able to take up spaces that they have kept us out of for many years. And when we start to really, exist within equity, who knows what's possible for our people? Because I think that's really the goal. We want to see a society where caste is annihilated. And I think oftentimes when we say the annihilation of caste, people focus on the destruction part. But I actually think we need to focus on the powerful, revolutionary, loving possibility of what it means to truly see each other as humans without this inhibitor that destroys, that diminishes and exploits. And that's really, I think, the taste of what Dalits start to feel once they've left India. And what we want is for everyone to feel that. So Hardeep and Reina, we want to thank you for sharing your experiences so candidly. And we look forward to kind of hearing more about how you guys take this analysis further. So thank you for joining us. And thank you all for joining us online.
Thank you, folks.